Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Professor Israel. Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick with you here this morning. Got a lot to get to. Mark Chaikin will join us at 8:15. We have earnings and we have a bank merger. So we'll roll right into it, Joel. What happened last night in the overnight session?
We got some red on the screen here, Spencer. Double close right up at 27.31, and then we had 27.29.5 yesterday. Tight range yesterday, but could not clear the close. So I'm looking for a temporary top here in the market until we take out that high from Tuesday. Coming back on the downside, your pre-market low is 27.10. We got more work to do on the downside, folks. I think we're going to trade at least 2,700 today on the downside. Crude down 53 cents at 53.38, and crude is just peeling back off that 55 high. No special technical formation to speak of in that. Gold's in the red here. Just a quiet decline off that 1330 high. I was looking at right at this area, 1340 as support. I'm not going to really look for 1300 yet, see if we can catch a bounce. Silver's in the red too. Silver's in the red by 1.6 cents here at 1568.5. So we got some red on the screen. I see all my top 10 components are red on the screen, but let's bring in Triple D, and he's in a silly mood today. How you doing, Dennis?
Yeah, somewhat of a silly mood. Okay, so we're gonna start the show a little bit different here, not talk stocks. I'm gonna show you my t-shirt here that my wife bought me, this t-shirt, and I did not get it. We'll see if you guys can get it. Can you see the whole thing, Spencer? Can you see the whole thing?
Yeah, yep.
Yes. Stay there.
Okay, I'm going to hold it here for 30 seconds or so. Everybody try to guess from the chat, YouTube chat, anybody else, pre-market chat, guess what the shirt means, if you can see it clearly.
I'm sure they can.
I'll give you a hint in a minute if nobody says it.
The hint is that neither Joel nor myself.
Nor I got it either. So my wife, that's why I'm showing you this. My wife gave me the shirt and I was like, I don't get it. I had sat there for 5 minutes trying to get it. I couldn't get it. And then she told me, I laughed out loud. I just told Spencer this morning and he laughed out loud too. So it's kind of funny, but let's see if you guys can get it. I don't see any guesses here yet.
I think
we got it in the YouTube chat. Lee Taylor. There we go.
Really?
Comma chameleon. That's it.
Comma chameleon. Boy George Culture Club right there. I did not get it either. And I like the 80s music. I'm a fan, but I did not get that shirt. So you two, who was that? We should give them a free subscription to Benzinga Pro right there.
I think Lee.
Up 1 month, free Benzinga Pro for a month. Can we hook them up?
All right. Lee Taylor, are you new to the chat? Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about it. You're the winner, but I said good lizard. Job. And what else did we get?
I thought it was iguana.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking lizard too. Same style. We were both thinking different ways there, obviously. But when you say chameleon, and then you look at all the commas, and it's actually karma chameleon. So you got to reach a little bit. But
I know.
Karma.
Shoot, man, she must have had a busy day at the dollar
That's
store.
That's impressive. Somebody got that. You think that came from the dollar store? I bet that came from Amazon. No way you're buying something on the dollar store.
All right, Triple D.
And Joel got a haircut.
I did. I don't know. How can you tell I got a haircut? I got my headphones on here. How can you tell?
That is some short hair.
I don't care, man. I'm a swimmer.
You gotta tell you. So how old are you now?
Double nickel.
55 and still has a full head of hair. That's impressive. You actually have to cut your hair. A lot of people at 55 don't have to cut their hair. I'm thinking I have to cut my hair, though, because this is starting to get out of hand.
It does.
I've kind of got like the McDavid flow or something going on here right now. It's my hockey flow. I'm gonna hold the hair until the Oilers actually win a hockey game, but
what do you got going on there?
It's a mess. Okay. I'm in rough shape.
All right, man. I took a shower, got up, pumped some iron. I did some swimming last night, so I am fired up, in good shape, ready to go here. Let's talk about
better shape than you. The swimmer, pumping iron.
I'm amazing.
You're in good shape. I'm amazing, he says. All right. What is amazing is the regional banks here this morning. And if you're looking at the KRE, you'll see that trading higher and you're like, what's going on? How is the KRE up 1.39%? But we will tell you, we have a bank merger here this morning in the regionals.
Yep. BB&T, North Carolina-based regional bank, and SunTrust, the Atlanta-based regional bank, are merging. Merger of equals. SunTrust shareholders are receiving 1.295 shares of BB&T for every share of SunTrust that they own. So BB&T shareholders will own the majority of the company, 57%, and SunTrust shareholders will own the rest.
So both stocks getting a lift here. This is one they're obviously plotting for BBT as well. Not often the case we see the acquirer go down. Not in this case here. STI getting a big lift up almost 10% here in the pre-market. So I like this. These are two stocks I like to trade. They're fairly liquid. I'm going to have a little risk-arb action going on here in these. So you risk-arb traders, we'll give that ratio once again, 1.295 BBT now equals 1 STI. So if you're trading those, that is your ratio. That is how these are trading here this morning. We can do the quick, I'll do the math in the background. Joel, break down the technicals and.
Can I give you a suggestion to trade this for a spread?
Sure.
Short BBT and short STI.
You want to short them both?
Yeah. All of a sudden.
Well, not really spread, but it's a market call. Why?
How much of these stocks move on these kind of things? I mean, for me, if I own these stocks,
bank in a long time though, so we don't have any. There's really no reference. When's the last time we had a bank merger? I feel like it's been like a big one. They get these little ones all the time, but a big bank merger, I've been a long time.
Yeah, I'm gonna look in pro, and I don't know when the last time. Let's see, you can sort by M&A, sort by
financials. Long time for a bank merger.
And why are they doing it, you think? I mean, like we disagreed on the pre-market show, and you thought that, or the pre-market show, you were looking at this as, hey, we're expanding, you know.
Did they say it in the release? Sometimes they say
I didn't look at it.
I didn't look at the release either.
I didn't read any of it, but what Spencer was saying, what I kind of agree with, is logic. Maybe they're just looking to expand. It's not like they're big bank, they're everywhere. The regionals are in their region, so maybe they're just looking, obviously, to expand into other regions. That's what I would logically think, but I don't know if that's true or not.
And I logically think that they see a slowdown coming and they want to cut costs and stream, you know, and fire people.
If you get the big banks that are everywhere, like a Bank America merging with Citi or something, I would say synergy, cost cutting. But when you get regionals, it's a different story because they're not everywhere. Okay. You know, you don't see BB&T everywhere. You don't see SunTrust everywhere. Maybe you do. But typically on the regionals, you know, and there's definitely going to be some of the synergies involved there too. So don't discount that. So it's a good point. But, you know, maybe they're just looking to expand. I don't know. I didn't actually read the headline. So I'm just more interested in trading the spread.
Okay. All right. I'm just looking at it. Just these stocks don't move that much. These are big moves. I don't know what the institutions that are holding these, you know, these stocks are thinking of it. It just makes them automatically that much more valuable. So that's just it, just from a technical perspective. I mean, if you were playing this from the long side and, you just want to buy it here and you want to see BBT just take out the pre-market high where it's trading right now, which is 51.47. And for the STT or STI, I mean, same thing. I mean, you just want to see these things just take off and go straight up. If they start to peel back at all, I think sellers will come in pretty good. But trading at the highs of the pre-market session. So nice windfall for anybody that had these stocks. Sympathy plays, or they probably already move on them, Dennis.
You can see right away, and it's not sympathy. You just see the KRE is trading up here. Let's go and look under the hood here, the KRE, because we've got that trade up 1.3. Obviously, it's probably got some BBT and some STI in it, which is helping it along. But let's see what other ones are in there. So KRE, we're looking at it this morning, equally weighted. So SunTrust is 1.72%. It's one of those that's mainly equally weighted. BBT is probably close to the same. Trying to see how much BBTs, and they own a ton of regional banks, but maybe they think it's going to kickstart it. 1.62% is BBT, so that helps it along, but, you know, and the market's selling off, so that obviously is not helping along, but I would think, you know, you got Regions Financial, RF, that's actually trading higher here in the pre-market. So it does look like you are going to see some sympathy here. You can go, there's got to be 100 regional banks. So I don't know if every single one is going to be higher here or not. But Fifth Third is one that comes to mind here too, just off the top of my head on that one. FITB, and that's trading up 0.9% in the pre-market. So if you're shorting regional banks this morning, be careful here, because when there's a merger in the sector, it can get a few other as excited. Comerica's trading up as well, CMA. So there's some regional banks for you.
And I think if you're going to try and play this way on those other stocks, I'm not going to do individual technicals on all of them, but I'd like to try and get a flat on the session. You know, I don't want to pay up any kind of premium. This could just be a one-off in the sector. So, you know, if something's trading up, see how it reacts around unchanged and take it from there. But interesting to see these two banks merging. Like you said, I don't remember a big
long
one
time.
Like this.
Long time. Did you find in this background, Spencer, if there was any?
Oh, no. I was looking for a merger equal or greater than the size of the one this morning, which is 60-some-odd billion dollars, and I went back 2 years and I couldn't find one, so I gave up. But to a question from the chat, Ed Seeking Missile, any non-banks in the KRE similar to what we had discussed last week?
Oh, I don't think so.
No, I just went through the whole list.
They're pretty strict on the bank. Like, you think the Qs, they have, you know, other stuff. You start to get in these, like, specific ETFs that are tracking specific like regional banks, I doubt they own anything that's not a regional bank in there. Like Qs is supposed to just track the NASDAQ 100. We just think of the Qs always as tech, but there's non-tech in there. That's why that play can come in. But when you get these regionals now, so there won't be any plays like that where you could short something that's not a non-regional bank in the index. I highly doubt that.
You know what? This is the biggest merger since Nations Bank bought Bank of America. You guys don't remember that, do you?
Joel, how many years ago are you going back on this one?
1998.
I was actually trading retail in 1998, so, and I was also in university in 1998. So, yes, I admit I do not remember this one.
NB was a great when I was at Oldie. You know, besides trading the order flow, you could trade individual stock. You know, besides, you know, we called it cabin trading. And Nations Bank was, I mean, it was like a $50-$60 stock, and it traded with an 8 spread. And it traded with size. I was bummed when they did that Bank of America merger. But, good old Nations Bank here. But let's move on. We got Mark Chaykin at 8:13, and we haven't done one earnings.
Well, we're going to quickly do Twitter. And we'll get Mark, and he can give his thoughts on Twitter here as well. I just want to say here.
You had a lead, and you didn't take it.
Yeah, it was up over $35 last night. And why? Because everybody was just saying, hey, Facebook blows it away, Snap blows it away, why won't Twitter blow it away? Just like there's no such thing as a triple bottom, though, from my experience, when you're getting the third play, and this would be the third one off the earnings, it usually doesn't work. So everybody who's betting last night, this was up. I wanted to short this. I was all about like, oh, 35, give me a nice lead. I almost think it's going to go down on the report, even if they beat, but I couldn't pull the trigger. Shame on me. Should have just went with the gut. I could have shorted this over 35 last night. I'm covering the 31 handle here this morning. Spencer, quick results, and we'll get Mark Jacobs.
Well, it is still early yet. They only reported at 7 o'clock this morning. So the Q4 EPS, 31 cents versus a 25 cent estimate. That's a nice beat. Sales, 909 versus 869 million. So beat on both the Q4 numbers, EPS, and sales there. The Q1 guidance that they gave, sales guidance, was in line, a range of 715 to 775 million versus a 762 million estimate. So in line Q1 sales guidance and Q4 beats on the earnings per share and the sales, that would tell you, hey, it seems like a good report from the headline, but hey, man.
If they would have reported first, I would say yes, but everybody was already leaning on that side, and the crowd gets punished every single time, especially when it's getting bit up a buck ahead of the report last night too. So when you're seeing stuff like that happen, and everybody was bullish on fast money last night too. I know Spinner would like that comment, but they were all bullish. But actually, I shouldn't say all of them. I think there was one that wasn't. But 3 out of 4 were bullish last night on Twitter as well. So everybody just leaned in the wrong way. Crowd the wrong way. And that's why it's getting punished here this morning. It's not sorry. It's the media will go find a reason. in the report, but more than not, it's all about sentiment. We talk about this on the show all the time. It's why our show is different. We try to talk, you know, it's not just about fundamentals all the time. A lot of times about the setups. It just so happened that everybody thought Twitter was going to beat, and everybody got crowded on the wrong side of the trade.
I just want to say real fast, when you say the media, what you really mean is the analysts. The analysts are the ones.
Not necessarily. Yes, I'm saying, yes, you know, CNBC, yes. I'm not saying is analysts. So
no, they, no.
Three of the four.
No, you know, look into every – I was doing, I was looking
I'm
at,
saying everything, analysts included.
Analysts first, I would say.
Well, I would say I agree. Analysts too. Everybody. But analysts aren't trading typically. So they're not going to make the trade crowded.
No, but
well,
they have,
might because
they have to justify the move.
Right, right, right. So it pushes people in. So I guess there's an argument there too. But I just think, you know, you got to follow where the crowd is. I mean, there is so much money to be made by just, you know, understanding, you know, where the crowd is, which side of the trade they're on, and then going the other way. It just works. And sometimes these setups are obvious. And this looked like an obvious one last night, and I wish I would have shorted. I just didn't have – all I envisioned was, oh, the move's supposed to be 12-13%. I'm like, if I'm wrong, I'm going to get run over. And I thought on take two, I thought they might do it the other way. And I would have been wrong on that one. So, you know, it's hit and miss a little bit. When you're going into an earnings report and you're making a call and you're shorting or buying into the report, it's a gamble. You know, even if it's an educated gamble, it's still a gamble. But I'm fairly confident that this is why it's trading down. I'm sure there's a reason that the media will find a fundamental reason. But in my opinion, I think it's just the trade was crowded alongside.
All right, I got a million things here to say about Twitter, but I just saw a question. I know we got to go to Mark here. My better film, should I do a stop loss when market opens or sell at market? Haven't done a stop loss yet. That's what TD Ameritrade tells me, to use a stop limit. We cannot give specific investment advice, but if you do a stop limit order, and let's say it's Twitter, and you put an order in at $32 even, you are only going to get done at $32 or better. So that is the danger you have when using a stop limit. If you just put a plain stop in there that is above the market, it's gonna get executed wherever, you know, the opening print is. So think about when your original target, where your original entry was, and then make your plan accordingly. Twitter, real quick, technicals, we're bouncing off 31. A couple guys in the chat mentioned that. 31.08 is your pre-market low.
We're going to get shaken here in a second, too, because we're 2 minutes over. And they are saying that there was a guidance, John Smith saying the guidance was down. So that is a good fundamental reason. So maybe it's a bad example on my part. I did not read the Twitter report. I've been trading here this morning. But in any regard here, it was still set up from the short side.
The guidance they gave a range. The range they gave was 715. That was the low end to 775. That was the high end, and that encompasses
A little light.
Okay, fine. Well, in any case,
we'll say it's a little light.
Okay, we'll call it light then. Let's take a quick break though, and I want to grab Mark Chaykin if we can. So we'll be right back in a moment here with Mark. And as promised, we are live now with Mark Chaykin, founder of Chaykin Analytics. Mark, how's it going for you this morning?
It's going well, Spencer. How are you guys?
We're doing all right. We're doing all right. We're just talking about Twitter. The report was out about an hour and change ago, and they are getting hit. It was a EPS beat and a sales beat, but the guidance, I guess we'll say the guidance was a little bit light, and they are getting hit now at around 3160-ish. So, we were just discussing that everyone seemed to be leaning one way, and when the seesaw gets too top heavy, it turns the other way. Thoughts on Twitter here?
Well, first of all, that's the problem with earnings season right now. We've had a 5 straight weeks up. We're into the 6th week, and a lot of the companies that are reporting are right at the top of the page. They're trading at their upper volatility band. It's really been a tough earnings season, much more difficult than any that I've ever lived through. I think Twitter's probably in a good position here because they've taken some steps to mitigate the Russian hacking potential, and I think it's still a platform of choice. So I think we, you know, what's happened with these moves is they tend to take 2 or 3 days to play out. So Twitter, the power gauge, had actually turned bullish yesterday, and then they come in with this report. Revenues beat because video sales were strong, but they're talking about higher costs. So I think we're talking about a situation where there's going to be some profit taking. The thing about Twitter is it hasn't done as well as some of the other leading names, like say a Salesforce.com or a Xilinx. And so you have the risk of getting back down to the lower end of the trading range, which gives you roughly where they're trading in here.
Mark, what are your thoughts here? Overall market, let's take it to. And we haven't talked the overall market here today. We've been on individual stocks, but I mean, we've had such an impressive rally from the lows. You know, this was one of the best Januaries in years for the market. Obviously, you know, everybody's selling everything in December, buying everything in January. February, we're just kind of slowing down here a little bit. And today, we're getting a little bit of a sell-off. We're down almost 20 handles on the S&P. Is this just profit-taking here? Is it still like coast clear, or are you a little bit nervous? What are your thoughts?
I'm not nervous. I think there have been too many people who have doubted this rally. It's a very unusual market pattern, unlike anything I've ever seen. The closest thing is to 1987, but even there, after you made that 22% one-day drop in October, you had a test of the lows in December, but a lot of people have been looking for tests of the lows. I think this market is high and going higher. So days like today, where you have some profit taking in the futures, I think is just the normal rhythm of an extreme overbought. And a lot of people have been left behind. Quite honestly, it's been hard to buy stocks here because of that. The stocks that we liked early on that we talked about 2 weeks ago, Salesforce.com, poster child for the kind of stock that's been leading this market. There've been no pullbacks. Very tough to buy, but
yeah.
I think the key is that two-day breath, that those two breath thrusts that we had within 10 days that wiped out all of the negativity. And what investors need a key on are this pattern of strong closes. We've had five straight weeks. We're on balance 4 to 5 days. We're closing in the upper portion of the range. There's demand for stocks at the end of the day, whether that's ETF buying. And of course, that's when the ETF basket makers do their work. So this so-called smart money index may not be as smart as it used to be, but it still reflects big demand, whether it's from institutional investors, whether it's from ETF basket makers who have to create new baskets to reflect intraday buying. This market is not pulling back unless we get that perfect storm on the 15th of February, namely, can't resolve the budget crisis because of the border wall, can't resolve China. We're getting closer to that deadline. And we have to start thinking about a debt ceiling. So unless we get a perfect storm of negative events, I think this market is going to be hard to buy, and pullbacks of 1.5 to 3 days are where you want to look to get in.
What sectors or what specific stocks would you be looking at? Because obviously there's a lot of stuff that has already ran a long ways. Would you be chasing the stuff that's already run, or would you be looking for something that maybe hasn't run quite as far?
Well, there are a lot of stocks that are starting to break out of bases. Synchrony Financial is an example of that, SYN.
Yeah.
So I think if you're looking to buy stocks that haven't made new 52-week highs or aren't close, you've got to look at some of the financials, some of the insurance stocks, but the real leaders are in the software and the business services group. So we've loved CRM. We've talked about it on the show many times. 2 weeks ago in my weekly newsletter, I recommended Cadence Design, CDNS. That stock continues to make new 52-week highs. This is one of the three companies that designs software for semiconductor manufacturers. This is a monopoly business, basically. And this stock has done very well. My colleague, Dan Russo, recommended Synapsys as his weekly stock of the week, SNPS. This is another software stock. So if you're looking to buy momentum, you want stocks making new 52-week highs, it's in the computer software and services group, and you wait for a two to three day pullback, and that's all you're gonna get for the time being.
Mark, we have ourselves a regional bank merger this morning, BB&T and SunTrust. And we're trying to figure out what that means for the regional banks as an industry. Is this a bullish or a bearish sign? Do you have any opinion there?
We love both those stocks. The power gauge has off and on been bullish on them. I think SunTrust has become big in the asset management business. BB&T is a very, very strong franchise that's moving north a bit to the Mid-Atlantic region. I think this is a sign of strength. This is almost takes them out of the regional category. It's not a money center bank, obviously, but I love both these stocks. The power gauges love them. I think stronger together, if they can cut some costs and penetrate into the kinds of markets where BB&T has been going and offer some of SunTrust's investment management services, this starts to look like a really strong company. And by the way, this is the biggest bank deal since 2009.
There we go. I only went back. I gave up looking after I got to like 2017. So there we go, 2009.
Yeah,
that's why I waited earlier on the show. It's like, when is the last bank merger? Like, you get these little ones all the time, like really small micro ones, but it's a big one.
Yeah, this is a $66 billion deal, and it does create the sixth largest bank in America. So I think what's interesting is the pre-market reaction. SunTrust up sharply, BB&T up a little less, but still up nicely. I think that this is really a strong merger, and they expect this to be accretive on a GAAP basis within 2 years.
Well, so, you know what else is, Mark, I was just going to say, is you've got all the other regional banks trading. It's a big red day for the market. And you got stocks like Regions Financial trading higher. You've got Comerica trading higher. Comerica is trading up $2 right now. Now that's only 100 shares. Somebody just bought it up, maybe got a little bit overexcited. But it looks like a lot of these other regional banks might open up 1% to 2% as well.
I think this is very bullish. I'm not sure it tells us anything about the economy because, the strong economy hasn't really benefited the banks, whether they're money center or regional. But I just think this creates a powerhouse. And I've always been fond of SunTrust over the last 18 months because they're expanding their asset management capability. Remember, there are a lot of small cap stocks in the Southern and Mid-Atlantic and region. And they're undercovered. And so the SunTrust Research Department and their asset management business has really been doing a good job of covering some of these companies, the small cap, mid cap names that are likely to break out. And of course, these companies are loyal to the people who follow them, especially when you only got two or three analysts following you. When there's an investment banking deal to be done, they're going to gravitate toward the people who've befriended them along the way. I think it's a very positive sign. Of course, the fact that the financials haven't participated in this rally off the December lows to any meaningful extent gives you the possibility of that new high in the S&P if the financials do kick in.
Mark, just before we let you go, just overall market question here. Obviously, you know, we had our all-time highs that we hit back earlier in October. We hit, you know, at the 2950 area. We plummeted all the way down in December to 2316.75. Maybe we're overvalued up there, undervalued here. We've come back. Really, not much has changed. You know, the China situation has not changed. Deadlock, gridlock in the White House here. You know, what's not to say that, you know, this market's really not going anywhere? We're not going back up to all-time highs. We're not going back to the lows. Maybe we'll just go back and grind at, 2,500, 2,600 area, 100, 150 points down here until we get some, meaningful action in Washington.
It's a possibility, but I think that what's changed is the psychology. We had a perfect storm in December, as we've discussed before, of hedge fund liquidations, bearish analysts forecasting a recession, China looking like it wasn't going to happen, and the Fed looking like they were going to raise rates ad infinitum without any reality check. And what I'm keying on for my upside targets here is the fact that you made the midterm low at 2350. Historically, and this goes back to 1950, you've had a 30% average gain from the mid-election year low. So 30% times 2350 puts you back over 3000. And then when you've had that double breath thrust, the Marty Zweig breath thrust that sadly everybody noticed, two big 95% up volume days within 10, that typically bodes well for a 20% gain 6 to 12 months out. So you have two very reliable historical patterns weighing in favor of a continuation of the move. Now, first quarter earnings are going to be key. So it may be that we chop around here until April when the first quarter earnings come out. But I don't see any immediate negatives in the market. Again, unless we have a perfect storm of the at the end of next week where Brexit looks like it doesn't happen in a friendly way, where they can't agree on a budget. So we shut down the government again, where the debt ceiling comes into play and so forth. But X that, and who can predict, you know, that? I do think that this market's going higher. And the reality is there's still a lot of people with money on the sidelines. And that's the problem with market time. Even if you call the top within 1 or 2%, did you get back in at 2350, at 2500, at when you broke through 2600? It's hard to buy momentum. I have a problem buying momentum. I like to buy a 1.5 to 3 day pullback. Sometimes you don't get it. So you can imagine what the public is feeling. So, but
hey, that's me too, Mark.
Line, I think
Mark,
we're
Mark
going
you're talking me too, exactly. Like, I was very close to calling the top, and I did lighten up my long-term portfolio, and I did not get it all back in. So I'm exactly in that boat, and I trade here every day. You know, and the long-term retirement account, I shouldn't have lightened it up because I didn't get back in time. So great point.
So that's one of the syndromes we're seeing here in the marketplace. If you couldn't get back into individual names, it's a lot easier to buy the SPY or the QQQ. And if you're buying the SPY, and it's not just individuals like you and me, it's institutions, the market makers and the basket creators have to create new product if the sellers weren't there during the day, but the buyers came in. That all happens in the final hour. So there has been for 5+ weeks now, very strong demand in the final hour. It probably reflects that frustration. Okay, I can't pull the trigger on CRM above 160, but I could buy the SPY because then I don't have single stock event risk. And I think that's probably going to continue for a bit longer until earnings season ends. Then we may have that sideways period where it's going to become more of a buy the dip mentality that's going to make it a little easier.
All right. We've been on with Mark Chaykin, the founder and CEO of Chaykin Analytics. Mark, as always, thanks for your time and have a good rest of the week.
My pleasure. Let's hope this continues. It's good for everybody's 401k plan.
That it is. Have a good one, Mark.
All right. Be good, guys. Thanks, Joel. Thanks, everybody, Dennis.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
8:34 here. I want to get to some earnings. I want to start with Match Group. We talked about them yesterday. We talked about this yesterday. They got the downgrade yesterday morning from Deutsche Bank to hold. And then the earnings after the bell, here is what they said. Q4 EPS, 39 cents, beat by a penny. Sales of $457 versus $448 million, so a beat there as well. The Q1 sales guidance was a little bit light, but what are you going to do about that? The stock, though, is up in your face, Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, and you know what? I obviously had it long, sold yesterday because I said, you know, it was an overnight trade. Playing it for the positive alpha, I guess I should have held it. But in those cases, I always take my losses. You know, I'm not a gambler here. I wasn't going to take it through the earnings report. So ate a small loss yesterday thanks to the Deutsche Bank downgrade there. And boom, you're right back up 58.01. Obviously, if you're looking for who's trading with this, IAC, we know, owns a huge chunk of Match still. So IAC will be trading higher here too. Joel, give us some levels.
Okay. Well, first of all, Match Group, the two analysts that downgraded this thing are hiding under their desk right now after the big beat.
I'm not happy with them either.
I know, Dennis. I didn't want to mention that. Wow, new all-time high for this stock, right? Is that correct? The former all-time high, the all-time high will be challenged, $58.95. We're trading at 50.
Oh, we actually were higher.
And we traded up to 60. I know. I was getting there. To me, long ring to register after those last couple days. If you're playing a breakout here, you want to buy this thing and you want to be taking out that pre-market high at 60, go 60 and a half, 61, boom, 62. That's how I'd be looking at it. A lot of people probably licking their wounds from the last couple downgrades. I expect people to be selling into this rally.
Don't forget, IAC has earnings after the bell today.
Oh, yeah, correct. Okay.
So something to keep
something
in mind.
To consider as well. They own a big chunk of Match, so they're getting the lift here because they own that big chunk. They have a lot of other businesses too. What else IAC own? They own a whole bunch of stuff, don't they?
It's a Barry Diller. Like, and
they own Tinder too, don't they?
No, that's Match.
Oh, Matt, yeah, Match is. But what else do they own? There's a whole bunch of stuff IAC owns.
They've got, I don't know, assets.
Plenty of fish.
I couldn't tell you.
You know what I read a while ago? I read that Barry Diller, he's the guy behind
Angie's List.
Yeah. I heard that Barry Diller's had a better, don't quote me on this, a better long-term performance than Warren Buffett.
It could very well be.
Could be.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go over to Chipotle now. CMG after the bell yesterday had their Q4 earnings report. EPS $1.72 versus $1.33. Big beat on the EPS. Sales 1.2 versus 1.19 billion. So a slight beat on that number as well. The Q4 comps were up 6% on the year-over-year basis, and they see their comps growing in the mid-single-digit range this year. And it all comes out to what in the stock, Joel? We are up.
Up $50.
Phew! That's 10%. A lot of burritos here. Did Acme get out of this?
No, I don't believe
so. Because he always buys high and sells low.
Oh, Dennis.
Or, sorry, we won't pick on Acme.
We were just saying how hard investing is. Yeah, investing is hard.
That was mean. I'm sorry, Acme, if you're listening. That was mean.
He doesn't like us anyways.
He doesn't like it. We've tried.
We tried to get him on the show.
He's not coming on Pre-Market Prep anytime
soon. No, I don't think so. Not anytime soon. Even his assistant doesn't like me. Pre-market high.
Did you try to get him?
Yeah.
Did you try to get him once?
Oh, more than once. I can't think of what his assistant.
Us will snub you too.
You know what? I'll see if I can find that email again. Wasn't very nice.
Assistant wasn't nice in the email.
No. 584.66. Really? Don't quote me on that.
Now we're gonna pick on him more.
584.66 is your pre-market high. You backed off there, but, you know, not a whole heck of a lot. You still find buyers at this elevated level. I'd love to see it take out 584.66, get up to 600. That would obviously be a big psychological level. And 589.15 was your high back in December of 15, man. So you're getting some nice confluence with the pre-market high. Above that, you get into the 600 handle, 632.98. That was a November 15th high. And it's just amazing when you don't poison people and they don't get sick from your food.
We haven't heard any sicknesses for a long time.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, I'm not a fan. I haven't been a fan of the stock. I wasn't a fan all the way down, not a fan all the way up. I'm just
same
not
here.
A fan. Same thing. I trade every once in a while, but I'm just not a fan, so I'm not going to be a fan. If I like it 400, I'm not going to like it 578.
Yeah.
So, it could keep going, sure. It's just not for me.
Okay. All right. Let's keep the earnings parade rolling on here.
Where else would you like to go?
FireEye.
FireEye. Okay. We can do FEYE reporting after the close yesterday. Q4 EPS, 6 cents beat by a penny. Sales 218 versus $216 million. The Q1 EPS guidance though was light. They guided a 2 cent loss to a 4 cent loss range. A 1 cent beat was the Q1 estimate on their EPS guidance. Their sales guidance was also a little bit light, around 208 versus $211 million, and their fiscal year guidance for the EPS and sales also light. So light guidance all around for FireEye in spite of the Q3 beat. Or Q4.
I mean, you're getting a nice dip here, but the one consideration is you look at like CyberArk, CYBR. You look at Palo Alto Networks, PANW. These stocks have been marching. FireEye, yeah, marched back a bit. But it always seems like the laggard. It always seems like the one that doesn't participate. It's like worst of breed, it seems like, if you're just comparing it all to those other cyber stocks. So I don't know. In that case, you know, that makes me think maybe I don't want to own this one. But then you get a nice dip. And you're getting down where you had support at 16 before.
Yeah.
Talked about by the dippers. You know, you could have a little Jeremy Newsom setup here where take out all that support at 16, maybe trade down to 1580, maybe get back above it. And then maybe that's where you get interested. So, you know, I don't know about buying it on the first time down there, but when they get back above it, that's where you get interesting. So I think you probably go down. You probably stop out everybody who's sitting at 16 because it looks like such a nice level. So you're probably going to at least trade down, I think, to 1590 or 1585. Hit all those stops that are just below 16. And then maybe you show some life. So if you can start to show some life after stopping everybody out, then maybe I'm interested.
Yep, I think so. FireEye has had a nice rally. I have played this on and off over the years, just kind of never got the big moves to the upside, so I kind of left it alone. I guess your odd support here, your pre-market low is coming in right at 16 even, and then you can see your low from December at 1611, or excuse me, 1536. So I don't know. I think I might, just the way we're just lumping down here at 1610, 1611, I think you're going to try and find some buyers at 15 and a half. I see 1, 2, 3, 4 lows between 1536 and 1578. I don't know. I think you just may get run over buying it at 16 the first time. And boy, short's going to be happy, though. If you've been shorting this thing since early January, you are back to break even. So battle the bulls and bears. I like 15 half as support, better than 16.
Well, then you find some support in here, but don't lean on that 16 because I think that's getting stopped out.
Yep, I agree.
All right, the top stock on my up filter this morning is iRobot. So let's go to IRB.
Oh, wow, big move.
Let's go to IRB.
Big move here on a terrible tape, too. Because, I mean, the terrible tape being that the market's down, first big down day we've had in a while.
So
a tough day to report and still up big.
The Q4 EPS, 84 cents versus a 50 cent estimate, sales of 384 versus $381 million. So big EPS beat and a still sales beat as well. The guidance they gave for the fiscal year EPS was higher, $3 to $3.25 versus a 288 cent estimate on the EPS. Sales guidance for the fiscal year higher as well. So guidance higher, earnings beats, and that's why you're up 15%, whatever.
Big pop, multiple highs in this 100 area. So we have failed up here before. That's the only concerning thing. 101.22 back in November. Then you can get over into December, 103.63. I don't know, every time it snuck its head above 100 back in November, December, it failed. Is it going to do it this time? Maybe, but it's scary to be. I think if I was long, I'd probably ring the register, but I don't know if I'm confident to initiate short there, though, because there's some air. You'd have to really give it some wiggle room.
Yeah, 105.88 was your after-hours high. That stock has not been back in the 100 handle since October, so it has been up there a few times, and it's caught a cold, so you really want to see it get back up, take out that pre-market high, and keep on going. Right now, you're just kind of hanging in at 100, really 100 to 101.50 range. And I was just curious. I looked after the close to see what they wanted for the 100 calls when the stock traded 13 bucks lower. They still wanted 230 for them, Dennis. So
it's hard.
Yeah.
Hard to buy the options ahead. The premiums are so high. We talked to GoPro yesterday, and remember on the show and in the chat, and we're saying it's a buck. Well, and it's up only going up 22 cents a straddle. So, it's so hard to make money buying options. I'm still of the fan that options are to be sold. Yes, the odd time you're going to have winners. I think in the long run, though, those time premiums chew you up. And when you've got, you know, the it jacked right up before whatever event it is, whether it's an earnings event or whatever it is, that makes it very difficult to make money in the long run when you're paying those jacked up premiums.
You know what? I got, and believe it, I have dubbed some spreads, but I've actually had a credit call spread in on the stock. I wanted to buy
this one?
Nope, not on this one. I wanted to really buy some puts in a Canopy Growth yesterday. And the premiums for the puts were just horrible.
Talk to me. What were they? So stock's 46. Let's say yesterday the stock's 47 bucks or whatever when you're looking at it, or 50 bucks.
Right. I sold the
it was yesterday, so it'd probably been like 46, 47 bucks somewhere there.
Yeah, I think it was trading around 46.75, and I sold the 47.5, 48 credit call spread.
And what do you get on that? Just curious.
I didn't get much, man. I only got 16 cents.
The 47 for it's tough, though. It's tough.
I know. and my risk is 50 cents if this thing goes up to that's why I always have a hard time with them. Is because
it's tough. I mean, it's tough. Like, I think, you know, we're rating way out of the money. I think makes some money. I think the way it's tough. And I trade options for a lot of years. And you know what? I had some mixed success with it. You know, some were good, some were bad. But I've always thought, you know, I did better on the writing side than I did on the buying side, for sure. And, you know, I'm pretty much strictly equities now. And that's why we mostly talk equities on the show. You know, obviously you can get options trades off of our show. We, you know, we talk, you know, we have options guys come on. Nick Shaheen's great. We bring him on every Tuesday. He'll be back next Tuesday. But
and tomorrow.
We just, what's that?
And tomorrow. He's on tomorrow.
Oh, Nick's coming on tomorrow too. Yeah. Okay, we'll get double dose of Nick. That'll be good. So, but it's tough. It's a tough game. So if you're always just buying options, and that's what a lot of people just like to do, is come buy options, buy options, buy options. Those premiums just eat you up.
Yeah, and it was Spinner. Spinner was the one that made the suggestion on it. So, I mean, I've done them before, but I don't know. I just looked at the chart on that thing. I'm like, man, this thing is, you know, well, one hell of a run. I'm looking for a little bit of a pullback. I think that was a quick rally. So, I mean, instead of buying the weeklies and letting them expire worthless and watch that premium decay, yeah, why the hell not sell them and just, yeah, see on the others? It's just like watching paint dry, you know, as opposed to like,
well, it's buying. Exciting when you're wide open.
Yeah, I know. It's like, but for me, I'm like, I'm not even looking at it. You know, and like, it's just like a position. You're like, okay, I know that's a winner. I'm not even going to look at it. You know, they don't even keep it off the board. But you don't get many of those. 848, Dennis. We did get a little dip down to 2708.75. We had some jobless claims that brought us up off that level. So, you know, off the lows here, be a nice target on the downside, 2708.75. Mid-range on the session, way up at 2719, but who knows with this one. What's going on with WWE? Someone just earnings. Said, yep.
Earnings, yep, this morning. It was actually at just about 15 minutes or so ago. WWE Q4 EPS, 46 cents versus a 29-cent estimate. So nice beat there. Sales, 272 versus 258 million. So beats on the top and the bottom line for WWE, and that explains your pop.
Whew.
Also, nice buyback, I believe, too.
Oh, $500 million buyback. Great call.
Yeah. Wide, $80 to $82.85. So we're very wide here. I do see multiple offers, $82.85, $83.84. It is starting to leak already here, too, because this thing got up over $85. That is a concern for the longs. I mean, that's what it's all about. You got to kind of analyze the tape. What has this thing done already? Well, it already went up. Now it's already leaking. So it's not like it's climbing. The momentum's already kind of working against you a little bit here. So not a great tape coming into it. They were leaning to the sell side, so maybe catch a few people maybe shorting it into the print. But I don't like the trading action here in the pre-market. I don't think this can be one that just rips back up to 85.
One number only, 84.52. That was your high in January, and we just got above that level in the pre-market. So that's what I'm looking at, 84.52, your big level in WWE.
Ed Parker, ATVI, buy, hold, or sell. We can group in EA and take two with all those because they all move together. They all move down about the same, 10 to 15%. All three of them were down. So Activision gets punished just because the other two got hit. I own Activision. I own EA. These are two bad ones, obviously. I'm down in both of them now. As of 3 days ago, I was up in EA and almost flat in ATVI. So I got dinged on this long-term portfolio. I'm going to stick with them in the long-term portfolio because I still believe in the e-gaming. In the esports, but I'll tell you, from a technical perspective,
they don't look good.
So if I was, you know, not already in it, I probably would wait until, you know, I have at least, you know, a signal to get in there. Again, if this was in my trading account, it would be long gone. But because of the long-term retirement account, and I'm, you know, I go with that Pactor guy, obviously, he knows a lot more fundamental than I do. I like the fact they still have the skins business and all the other stuff going on. I like ATVI long term, but I'll tell you, it looks like it could get cheaper yet.
I hear Flashlight Tag is making a comeback, and so kids.
What the hell is Flashlight
Tag? I know what that is.
What's Flashlight Tag? Was this something you did when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Joel, are you taking me back to your
go ahead, Spencer. Well, fill them in.
No, what is flashlight?
It's tag essentially with a flashlight, with the beam of a flashlight.
Like, you played at night in the dark.
And how is that different than laser tag? This is what they did before lasers were invented. Maybe.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Wicked tangent on that one.
Oh, man, I don't understand these games. These people sitting in front of these consoles and spending all this time. I think they're doing it a hell of a lot less, Dennis. And I don't think it's – I think the hype is –
I don't think so. I think they're all just playing Fortnite, like Spice says. I think they're all playing the same game. So all these other game makers are suffering right now because they got one awesome game that everybody's playing.
Yep.
That will change. I mean, 5 years from now, not everybody's going to be playing Fortnite. So it'll be something different. We don't know who's going to make the next best game. But I don't think there's any of these gamers that aren't playing games anymore. I know multiple gamers that are hardcore into this. I don't think it's going away. I think, you know, we could say the stocks. I think ATBI, EA, and Take-Two are getting hit simply because Fortnite is awesome.
And it's free, right? So you don't know. What other? There was another. Perhaps the worst name change and symbol change ever reported today. Tapestry, which is what? Now I have to look that symbol up almost
TPR.
Every time.
TPR.
Getting crushed after a big run-up. How bad was the report, or was it some guidance?
Yeah, so much for the last 4 weeks' worth of gains there. Q2 EPS, $1.07, missed the $1.11 estimate. Sales, $1.8 versus $1.86 billion, so miss on both the EPS and sales on the Q2. The EPS guidance they gave for the fiscal year was also light. $2.55 to $2.60 was the range they gave. $2.79 was the estimate, so light guidance and missed earnings.
Nice run up, getting a dip. Again, you've come so far. Why not stop out the people at the low of 34.87? We'll see what happens if they get down 34.50, 34. Get back above 35 after you stop everybody out there. Then I get interested. So, and you know, sometimes these setups take a few days too. Like, I mean, in Intel's case. It didn't bounce right back. You know, yeah, you had a little bounce, but you never breached then the low of the initial move. So maybe you make that low on the original day, then maybe come and retest. Maybe that's when you get in. But just trying to call the bottom of the initial fall was really a good way to lose a lot of money. I don't like just trying to call the bottom initially. Give me a reference point. You know, let's let everybody flush out. We don't know where this bottom's going to be. Wait a couple of days, and then you have a tradable bottom. So I want to see the flush, which we're going to see today. And then maybe wait a couple days, maybe a retest of the flush, and maybe that holds.
34.18 is your pre-market low. Do we get that low? Let me see here. No. Yep, 34.18, and then I see a daily low right at that area, 34.04. So I'd be patient, wait to see what happens in the lower 34 handle. The thing after that, it just drops right to 33 here. So a lot of shorts will, you know, in this potentially covering here after this huge drop. And looks like you're finding some bids. 34.50 is in under. Just keep an eye. January 7th low was 34.04. Jim Herb is asking, Dennis, would you have played iRobot with options? And Dennis, I'll let you answer that. Jim must have turned in
well,
a little bit late.
If I was back in the day, like I said, I don't trade very many options anymore. I'm not a big fan. Just I'm more equities guy. It's my niche. It's what I know. I haven't been trading options actively in years. I trade them a lot back in the early 2000s. But like I said, if you were long calls, I always love the strategy of selling the stock against my call. Especially after hours when you can't lock in those gains. So something maybe gets past where the expected move is going to be and you think, okay, this is getting overdone. If you're just flat out long options, you're waiting for the next day to sell your options at the 9:30 open and maybe it's come all the way back in, or maybe you can lock in those profits always by selling the stock against your calls. So then you've locked in. And then if the stock comes and has a complete reversal and ends up giving it all back or something, and not saying it's going to happen, it's not going to happen in the case of iRobot, so it's not a good example. But in some cases, then you can start participating again because you're short and you don't have to exercise those calls. So if it ever went below your strike price, so let's just say hypothetically at the 100 calls and the stock went up to, how high did we get on iRobot? 105?
105.88.
Let's say you shorted like against a 104. You locked in 4 points. Stock comes back under $100 now. You're short from 104. You don't have to exercise that 100. It goes down to like 97.98. You make 6 points. So I always love the strategy of selling the stock against my options. It was a way that I extracted. I felt extra alpha. And it was a way to lock in the profits when you feel like you know, this stock or might be going, might be turning, going down, you know, in the after hours action. So, you know, just tape reading in the after hours allows you to get out, where if you're just waiting and just flat out buying and selling, the options market isn't open at 5 o'clock last night. You have to wait till it opens at 9:30. And obviously the premium is going to be a lot less now than they were when the stock was trading at 105. So I always think if you're buying options, got to learn how to trade a little bit of the move and take advantage of those, you know, wicked swings that the stocks sometimes have in the initial move off the headline numbers.
And I think if, and I don't do this enough, and I know you, the way you play it, Dennis, is through the actual stock and the alpha running up ahead of earnings. But, you know, if you have a stock, like say iRobot, you think they're having good earnings, you know what the date is, maybe try jockeying yourself, you know, 2 or 3 weeks out, you know, before, you know, the stock had a nice run up. So, you know, the premium gets built into it. You have a little bit of a lead. I mean, this thing was down at 84, pick a support level. So then, you know, you have a little bit of lead on it. And then, you know, when they jack up the premium right the week before, you can use that either to take profit. So I think it's good. It's hard to do. And I think you just got to, you know, instead of getting hyped in and buying the options yesterday, if it's, you know, you're doing your homework, this is a long-term play for you, boom, get in a week or two ahead of time, and then, you know, maybe sell another option against it to lock in some profits. A lot of different things you can do. We can ask those Nick those questions tomorrow.
But just think about Nick and think why he's profitable all the time. He is a net seller of options. If you're net buyers of options, you're paying premium. You're net sellers of options, you're getting premium. And he's always, you know, he's often profitable because in the long run, because he's a net seller of options. So yeah, the odd time I play some lottos. I used to play lottos too. Sometimes they work out. Sometimes you get a feel. Sometimes you don't. But I tell you, I think I made a lot more money selling options than buying options when I was trading back in the 2000s.
Okay. All right, Spencer. It is 8:58. Do we miss any reports? Do you want to do some ratings? What's your fancy?
Well, we missed a ton of reports here, but we're only going to get
171 stocks reporting today, so definitely.
And we'd have to look at Dennis's chameleon shirt.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it took up 10 minutes of the show.
And did we get the listener there a free trial to Benzinga Pro?
No, it was Lee in the YouTube chat email. If you email premarket@benzinga.com, I will hook you up with some a Benzinga Pro trial and some swag for that question. But as far as
it was a good answer, I was the only person that got it. I'm impressed because I didn't get it, you didn't get it, Joel didn't get it.
No,
that was a hard
nobody
one.
Got it. As far as ratings, not a ton today. Spirit Airlines upgraded at Goldman Sachs to buy. They raised their price target from 78 to 85. Guess upgraded Jefferies to buy. That's essentially it as far as ratings that caught my eye. A lot of earnings reactions. Cummins CMI downgrade Oppenheimer to neutral, or their version of neutral, which is Perform. And that's really all I saw as far as ratings. So not a ton in the way of ratings. Any final thoughts, guys, before we head out for the day?
Let's see here. For resistance in the S&Ps, you have mid-range at 27.19, and then you have a pair of lows at 27.22. So that's what I'm going to be prepared to sit to on a rally, riding my shorts and coming back on the downside. Love to see you take out the pre-market low of 0.875. If, in fact, we can do that, I think we got some work to do. Under 2,700, your four-day low comes in at 2,695.50. That's all I have for you.
All right. And then on that note, that will do it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Mark Chaykin. Thanks to all of you in both of our chat rooms. We have two. There's the one on YouTube, and there's also the chat room we have on premarket.benzinga.com. Our main site requires a login, but it's free, and it's going all day, even after the show ends. So again, that's premarket.benzinga.com for that. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous show, catch our full archives on our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Just search for Benzinga or Premarket Prep on any of those platforms. Like I mentioned, tomorrow's show will be joined by Nick Shaheen, author of Create Income with option spreads, but that will do it for us. So please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Hope you all have had a good morning. Hope you have a good rest of your day, and I hope we'll see you again on Friday.